Hello and welcome to episode 47 of Digital Outbox. Hi and thanks for joining us. This week I have Chris.
Hello.
And Henry.
Hello there.
Hello there. No Shaq again. He's off doing something less boring instead.
There's a song about that.
There is. But there's
a whole TV series.
It's far too long ago. How are we both?
I'm very good. I'm a bit electioned out, but other than that, good.
You can't be electioned out.
Well, yeah, no, it's not even true. I am actually quite interested and intrigued by it all.
Well,
something like that. Henry.
No, I'm loving the whole. I think a lot of people don't want Tories in. Well, I don't, and the whole coalition of the losers. I just think it's got such great potential.
Led by losers.
So, and I was just about to crack on with tech stories, but there was one election tech story I must mention, and that was the stupid touchscreen device they had in the BBC election programme.
The stupid touchscreen, that was magnificent.
It really wound me up, and there was two reasons. One, all the buttons were at the bottom on a big screen, which you had to keep on bending down. Two, her first touch was never recognised. It was always touch, touch, touch again.
It's always shouting in her ears, double tap, double tap.
Well, what I couldn't figure out was it somebody in the background was actually pressing a button and it wasn't a touchscreen? Or was it really an Android device? I couldn't quite figure out which was which. Out.
I thought it was spectacularly good for a bit of beta software and hardware.
But and well done, Dimbleby, for lasting for 18 hours.
Well, he did look a bit drained at the end, though, didn't he?
There is that. The other thing is, Jeremy Vine is no way a decent substitute for Peter Snow with the...
I saw him knocking over a ton of virtual dominoes at one point.
And also, it was all the paving stones on Downing Street as well. Oh, it was like, get a grip.
Oh, I didn't see all
it
that
was
bit.
Rubbish. And he wasn't nearly as excited. Peter Snow used to get so excited about all these things, about the swingometer and the swing of 0.5% from the Conservatives to Labour. And this is just, you know, if this was replicated across the country, you know. And I'm like, you know, how could anyone get so excited about...
There was an adult TV show that was doing the swingometers, but with different implements, apparently. Mm. Certain bits of anatomy.
I think there should have been a Channel 4 or 5 should have done a retro night. They should have got Peter Snow in with a big wooden stick. Just move it around randomly.
Very day-to-day, yeah.
Actually, that would work, wouldn't it? I mean, if we did a kind of a spin the bottle for the next Prime Minister, that would probably work much better.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know about that.
As long as Mandelson's not in the outer
circle. Exactly. The forces of darkness sit in the corner. Oh, look. It's pointing to me. Our first story is another Facebook mistake.
Yes. So by trying to allay people's fears about security, they've inadvertently screwed up again. They tried to make a page that let users view their profile as someone else would see it. So, you know, how do my friends see my profile and how do people who aren't my friends see my profile? But unfortunately, by doing it, they did it via a bit of URL detail, and some conniving people thought, I'll just change that ID and see what happens. And it turned out that by doing that, they could actually view your private chat messages and also view your outstanding friend requests. So they had to quickly take offline their chat system for a few hours, and they had to try and correct it.
But the thing is,
it just seems like they're not really in control of what they're doing at the moment.
But that feature has been there for, what, a year, 2 years?
So it's only someone now spotting it, maybe?
It's not like a new feature. So it's clearly been there for a long time, maybe.
Yeah, you could always go and see what your profile page looked like.
Could you see it as related to your friends and then related to different, you know,
I don't know.
Whatever, yeah, something yes, that they changed yes, due to the latest privacy, though, they've has made it all go wrong. just seems like, you know, they're in charge of a lot of data at the moment, and are they in control of it? I'm not sure they are. But they've also come out and said this week that they don't really think that the media are giving them the, you know, the same viewpoint as their users. They say their users love all the privacy changes that are going on.
Rubbish.
I'm not sure how they quite know
I'm
whether
a user
they
and I
like
don't
it.
Like it.
Right, and that's what they're saying. They're saying it's the media that are coming out and saying that all these privacy changes are not good and they shouldn't be done in the same way. Well, they shouldn't be done as they are, you know, which is without asking.
It's media and more kind of geeky, technically aware users that are complaining.
Right.
So, and I guess if they did it on a percentage scale, it would be 0.001%.
Are making the fuss.
Yeah.
But say, so Facebook are saying their users love it, but I mean, I'm a Facebook user and I don't love it. I think it sucks. And it's the change of direction from an assumption of closedness, you know, an assumption of privacy, where, you know, you tell your information in and you expect that to be private, and then open up the bits you want to open up. Now it's changed around to completely the opposite way, which is everything's open and you have to work really hard to try and tie it down.
It's all about the money.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is.
It is all about the money, yep.
And also, so Facebook saying, you know, people put stuff on Facebook that they want to share with their friends. And I think, yeah, they do want to share it with their friends, but they don't necessarily want to share it with everyone. They don't necessarily want to share it with their employers, for one thing.
No, even I saw one article through the week, and it was an interesting take on the like button. And is it a way of usurping Google's link juice? So everybody's obsessed with links, and that's what drives, you know, Google search, amongst a whole lot of other things. But by placing like buttons, then with the amount of users they've now got, the amount of information that they then gather,
it's
massive.
Between 300 and 400 million people, isn't it?
Yes.
400 million, yeah, that's what we said last week.
And it's very active people as well. You know, it's an interesting idea that the like button could actually start to harm, you know, Google, just because a lot more people are now just clicking a like button, and that's information harvested by Facebook.
Yep. For me, it's what they've got. They affect every bit of content you put into Facebook since the beginning. It's pretty much you sign over the rights to that content to Facebook forever.
Yes, I've added a link in the, I'll put in the show notes. It was what's the guy's name? Matt McKeon has done a picture, Evolution of Privacy in Facebook. And it's a picture that shows you all the different content, the different, I guess, the availability of your data if you just went with default settings on Facebook, and how it's changed over time. So down the right-hand side, you can change the timeline. And in 2005, 2006, a very slow evolution of privacy. But in the last 6 months, it's just a massive change. And that's why they're getting the bad press. And it really...
And the other thing about it is there is no way in Facebook, if you want to remove yourself from Facebook, there is no way to do that. You cannot remove all this information. Even if you deactivate your account, it still exists on Facebook. And part of their changes has been to say, we no longer have a time-limited aspect to your content, which, you know, will be deleted after X number of months or years or whatever. They now say we can have it for as long as we like. So there's no way of extracting yourself. Once something's out there on Facebook, it's out there. Permanently viewable. So,
also like the fact that when you do deactivate, it shows you all your friends and saying you won't be able to keep in touch with these people anymore.
I've never even seen that. So
I've seen pictures of somebody doing it, and it's almost like putting up, I'm going to kill puppies if you leave. It's just total emotional blackmail.
I agree with their stance, which is, yes, people join up to share with stuff, and obviously the more open it is, the better you can share things. But all that would take to stop them moaning is if they had an assumption of privacy, that people had easy tools to open up whatever they wanted to open up. That was all the change.
Even just make it obvious. As we said last week, I go in and look at the privacy settings. It's just not very obvious.
It's not at all obvious. But I would definitely say to people now, I mean, you know, when I first joined Facebook, there were people there that I was quite surprised that they'd got, like, their mobile numbers, email addresses, dates of birth, address, you know. And because there was an assumption of privacy that it was only your friends that you'd let see that, it was an easy way for them to get in touch with you.
Yes.
Nowadays, I would say to anybody, don't put anything like that on your Facebook profile. Don't put anything like
it's
that.
It's going to get scraped, and what people also don't realize is the developers in the background are free to look at that information of friends of friends and things like that. And they can scrape it out. Although they sign up to things to say they're not going to, it's still perfectly possible for people to scrape out information.
So indeed. Yeah,
worries okay. me.
Okay, worried one. We shall move on to some hardware stories. A couple of surprising, well, I thought it was surprising. I think a lot of other people didn't. Microsoft have cancelled their Courier project. So Courier was the kind of book-style tablet device, dual screens. It looked very promising, but it's been scrapped. Are you too surprised?
I remember when I was watching those kind of demos of it, thinking, yeah, this is all very nice. But in reality, everything they were showing you and the processes and things, when it comes to, if you actually came to try and build that, I don't think it'd be possible. Because the device had to mind read what you were trying to do. I don't know. I wasn't even, I don't know how far down the line they got with this, but I wasn't that surprised that they said they're not going to do it.
No, and I think it was also, it's another thing, it was based on Windows 7, wasn't it? Rather than Windows Phone 7 or Windows 7 Phone, whatever they're calling it these days. And I think
it was a completely separate operating system. I don't think
was it completely different?
Anything.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll just shut up then.
I think it was a concept of how a device like that might work for, say, a designer, almost like carrying around a portfolio of stuff with you, almost. I wasn't surprised. I mean, everyone rated it and said it looked amazing. It was the first time anyone's seen anything on a kind of tablet touch device that actually looked like it would be useful.
Definitely. I must admit, I was very disappointed, even just from a point of view of just something very futuristic, something different.
Yeah, it was good to see it. But I'm sure that would filter down into products. You know, that knowledge isn't lost and that kind of thought process isn't lost.
No, time will tell. I guess a more surprising one, and it's only TechCrunch that's reporting this at the moment, and everybody else has reported TechCrunch, but seemingly HP's killed Windows 7 Slate device. Now, the Slate device was the one that was really the rival to iPad. It was going to be running Windows 7.
It was the one Steve Ballmer demoed on stage, yep. Wasn't it?
And yep. It was they demoed that before the iPad was released because everybody thought Apple was bringing out a Slate and they got in there first. But seemingly, it's been scrapped because they've got power issues. So Intel-based hardware is too power-hungry, coupled with Windows 7.
Yeah, this really is the Windows 7 tablet computer, isn't it? This really
yes.
was the Windows, and you know, I think Apple have kind of proven really that's really not gonna, that's not really gonna cut the mustard if you're gonna really get a successful tablet. I don't think this is necessarily the end of HP's Slate computer. I think, you know, if they did the Palm acquisition and they come out with a WebOS Slate, that would be really interesting to see, and that could be potentially something that would rival the
iPad. And that's
iPad.
What everyone's speculating, isn't it? That's why yeah. they've bought the WebOS to try and convert that into a tablet type interface
yes
as a quick way in, but no one quite, they haven't confirmed or denied it, we don't really know. I'm sure Windows 7 Slates or whatever tablets will come out, but they will be facing the same situation as old ones.
Yeah, they'll be rubbish.
You know, they're trying to run full Windows, and as they say, that it's too power hungry, they're not going to get the battery life long enough to make it useful. But you might think that, you know, at least someone else would build one to give people a choice of it, I guess.
You can always buy the Juju.
or those Arcos have had these Slate things.
Yeah, but they're really ugly.
I know. No, I'm just saying that if you really want one, then you can get one.
I know, there was one reviewed not so long ago in a couple of the kind of UK tech magazines, and it was just, you know, that, oh, I just looked at them and just, no, I just don't like it at all.
Well, they've certainly not sold a million in the first 30 days or the first 3 years or whatever that they've been available, have they?
No. No. So
I think Linux are in a really strong position to build an operating system for a tablet type device, mash up on top of their thing. I mean, Chrome OS is built on Linux, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you're going to see an Android or Chrome OS tablet by the end of the year. I think that just makes sense.
And I think they're in a position to do a really good job on that.
I think so.
Can be made really lightweight. It doesn't have a massive amount of processor need. And there's clever people out there that can manipulate these things to do what they want.
Yeah. And it just looks like for a tablet, you're going to have probably two main choices, which is the Android kind of tablets or an iPad. Speaking of which, UK details came out.
Tell me, how much are they going to charge me?
Pucker up. So
brace yourself.
I'll get some other details out of the way first. You can pre-order it from Monday the 10th of May. The release date is the 28th of May. For the Wi-Fi edition, the cheapest is £429.
So that is the cheapest model you can get of all.
So that's Wi-Fi only, 16 meg.
Gig.
Yeah.
16 meg, welcome to the
80s. I had that whole kind of floppy drive scrapping nonsense story.
And anyway,
16
meg in the 80s would have been huge, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Sorry, welcome to the 90s.
Ashes to ashes last night, still in my head. So mid-range, 32 gig, £499, and the 64 gig is £599. For the 3G, it's £529 for 16 gig, £599 for 32, £699 for 64.
And that's the base price if you don't have any data modelling with it, is that right?
Yes.
So it's just £100 basically for having the 3G radio in it.
Okay. And I guess my initial reaction was the £429 just feels a bit ouchy.
How much? What's the dollar version? I can't remember the dollar.
$499
amount for the.
Yeah, it's $499. So if you do the conversion, it's working out. You know, it feels like there's a lot of difference, but then you get into the whole there's VAT on this price, and you add sales tax on if you're in America, which you don't see when you're buying online. So I don't know how comparable it ends up being. I don't
it's
think
still
it's
still more, isn't it?
Oh, it's still more. Maybe not it's as still more. I'm not going to sit here and try and defend it. It's still more. But I've never bought anything in America, so I'd need to go there and buy it rather than just going onto Amazon.com and seeing a price and going, look, it's dearer. You know, it's just I just know it's not apples for apples. Ba-dum-tsh.
It's not right. I tell you what, this isn't low enough price for me to think, oh, I'll get one just because you know it's cheap enough that it doesn't matter. So it's definitely not one of those devices for me.
No, I think one of the things is you start looking at the £500 laptops and things, and actually you're looking at some pretty serious machines. You're not talking about Mickey Mouse netbooks.
Oh, no, definitely not.
For £700, you can have a desktop replacement laptop pretty well-powered.
You can get, for £700, you can almost get a MacBook.
I tell you what, you can get a MacBook, just go to the refurb store, and you'll get a brand new MacBook with a year's guarantee.
Are you still tempted, Ian?
Yeah. But where my head at is at the moment is waiting for WWDC and probably seeing when the new iPhone comes out.
So there's going to be roughly a month from when you can pre-order to the actual WWDC event.
Well,
yeah?
WWDC is, I think, 4th or 9th of June. And this comes out in May the
28th. But the pre-orders are May 10th.
Oh, I'm not going to pre-order.
Last the whole month?
Oh, I'm not going to pre-order. Buy it, I have a certain very friendly chap going to Florida in June, and he will pick me up an iPad from the States.
And is there no issue about doing that? Does that affect your iBook store and stuff? Are you saying no, because you don't think there is, or because you know there isn't?
No, you if you're wanting, because the App Store's not available in the UK right now, you need to buy some bits and pieces from America and set up an American iTunes account. But it's fairly straightforward to do.
Sounds like a pain to me.
Well,
there'll not be an issue with that once it's launched in the UK.
It's an issue now because it's not launched. Yeah, exactly. Come May 28th, it's launched and it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One more important thing to point out, we were speculating before that when it was released, will we have an iBook store? And yes, there will. So for all the international launches, the iBook store will be there.
Data rates, how much are we looking at?
Data rates, it's only Orange that's came out at the moment with their prices, with a number of different options, pay-as-you-go, daily, weekly and monthly deals. With the pay-as-you-go option, Each megabyte's 5p, up to a maximum of £40 in a month. So 800 meg would be that 40 quid. You've got a daily option of £2 up to 200 megs worth of data, which you must use before midnight, and it doesn't roll over, but you can buy it on an ad hoc basis, which doesn't sound too bad. You know, if I was away travelling once every couple of weeks and I wanted to buy a day's worth of data, doesn't sound too bad.
When they say up to, like, so on the pay as you go, when they say up to £40 a month, does that mean if you do more than 800 megabyte in a month, it doesn't cost you any more? Is that what they're saying?
Well, I don't know. I need to go and look at all the terms and conditions. I don't know if they would then, you know, suggest a different way of doing it, because there's monthly deals. The weekly one was £7.50 for a gig of 3G data over the week. And also there's two monthly packages, a 15 and a 25, costing 15 and 25 quid each. And the 15 is 3 gig, the 25 is 10 gig. But the only thing I was surprised at this is they seem to limit Wi-Fi to 750 meg on BT OpenZone. It's a bit sucky. So that's the only ones that have come out with pricing so far, which to me seems a bit mixed.
That is no better than any of the, we talked before about getting the, what do they call it, the MiFi, or yep, one of those things. And actually, you could get a better deal.
I think so with
something like that, and getting the Wi-Fi.
Because look,
save yourself £100. Yeah, just that you'd have to carry it around with you. That's all, isn't it?
Yeah, but then you carry it around, but it can be used by other devices. So if you had a laptop or an iPhone or anything else, you can make use of it as well.
And I'm still waiting for a subsidised hardware price.
Not in here, is it?
There's nothing there, and I'm really surprised, because, you know, that's a business model that is quite common here.
I wonder if you won't see it at launch, just because I guess they're assuming there's going to be so much demand. I wonder if they'll wait, you know, 3-4 months, and then those kind of deals will start kicking in.
But I'm still quite surprised, because it's definitely the kind of thing which, you know, even if Apple weren't very happy to go along with, there's nothing really to stop people buying up a bundle of these and then doing the discount. So I'm quite surprised.
Mm.
We shall see.
So time will tell. I'm still quite keen to get one. I must admit, still quite keen. But I don't think I'm not pre-ordering. I'm not really fussed about getting it in day one. Day two, I might, but not in day one.
I bet day one you'll be down that shop.
No,
even if you don't buy it, you might want to go see it.
Well, when is day one? The 28th, is that a Friday or a Thursday or a Saturday?
No idea.
It's a Friday. I'm playing golf that day, so I won't be at the Apple store. It's the only day of the year I play golf. Badly.
I've seen videos.
Exactly. If only tech could help me.
I'll tell you something, though, and this is something that puts me off getting one straight away, is the fact that OS 4 is not coming to the iPad until the autumn.
No.
And, you know, that does do the multitasking and all these kind of nice things which you'd kind of really, you're really wanting with a device like this.
I just feel I can wait. And I guess I have there's a bit of me as well. Let's see, if I wait a month or two, I'll probably just think, sod it, next year. Just get next year's model.
Well, with the front-facing camera and all that kind of stuff would make it much more useful for the likes of Skype and things.
Definitely, definitely.
So,
time will tell. Moving on, we have a flurry of Google stories. We should just really spin off another podcast. just copy Leo Laporte instead of This Week in Google. We could have Google Flurry.
Google Flurry.
First up, Google Editions. Go on.
I was just going to say that with the two out of three of us today from Scotland, it could be a McFlurry.
Oh, ba-dum-tsh.
Oh, very ice creamy.
That wasn't worth waiting for, was it?
In true Leo Laporte fashion, I would now roll right into a McDonald's advert and see how McDonald's is a really great product that I use frequently. And,
you know, if you're hungry, where do you normally go? I mean, where I normally go, the food sucks. I'll tell you where you should go. Anyway, let's not do a fake.
Burger King? Because it ain't going to be McDonald's. Go sushi, far better. Anyway, Google Editions is coming. It's a Google bookstore. It's not going to be tied to any devices. It's just going to be, as long as you can get a web access on any of your device, you should be able to access Google Editions. And to date, Google have scanned over 12 million books, both in and out of print, giving it a greater selection of material than either Apple or Amazon. Out in the summer.
So yes, now, this is definitely opening things up, isn't it, I guess?
My question about this is, have they sorted out all their legal issues with the Authors Guild in the States? And
I don't think they have. I think there was an
agreement that wasn't liked, and I don't know if there was an appeal that went in.
I thought the agreement was for each author could opt in or opt out, but I don't know what happens if they opt out, whether it just meant their book wasn't part of the service or not.
Okay.
So, I think
they had an agreement of sorts, at least enough that they could move forward, at least.
There must be something in place or else we wouldn't be able to launch this service, surely.
Surely. Well, that was just my question.
Don't call me Shirley.
So, next up is they've bought Bumptop.
They have indeed. Bumptop?
I've never downloaded it. So, you could actually download it. I didn't even realise you could do that.
Now, I'm surprised, Chris, because I'm sure we've mentioned this on the podcast before.
I've seen it before.
It's either been one of our picks or something like that. So, it definitely
has. You think I listen to this stuff?
So, Bumptop was a Mac and Windows piece of software that you could download. There was a free version, a pro version. And basically, it gave you this kind of 3D virtually desktop where you could stack up files into different folders and all that kind of stuff. And whenever I used it, it just didn't make much sense as a mouse-driven environment. But as a touch-driven environment, who knows?
I think it's supposed to be a touch-driven environment. I think that's the whole point of it. You know, there's different gestures, things like you can shuffle things as if they're real by using the side of your finger and things like that, and sort of spread things out and contract them by sort of using pinch gestures. And it looked intuitive, I have to say.
Yes, and it was quite an interesting paradigm, this kind of looking at an open box, if you like. So what you also had is, as well as the usual kind of desktop, you had like the walls of a box, which you could also like kind of pin things on, if you liked, and kind of move things around that. And that's the kind of the 3D element as well of it that made it quite an interesting paradigm that was a bit of a difference to this kind of standard desktop. But do
you feel we need that difference? You know, I mean, my desktop's pretty good, I think.
Yeah, well, I looked at it and it didn't really do much for me, and I did try it, but certainly didn't pony up for the pro version that they were looking for money for.
And what it felt for me as well is that it just made the changes to your desktop, didn't affect anything. You know, all your underlying file structure was still the same. You know, so if you've got all your documents in an actual subfolder somewhere, didn't apply to that. It was just really your desktop. But whether they think they've got something for a future touchscreen device, whether it be Chrome OS or some other Android device, I don't know.
You can take it from the app style of working that you've got on a portable device like your Android or your iPhone, you know, where you've got little icons which represent applications, and being able to shove them around and put them in stacks and spread them around, it's quite a compelling way to do that.
Now, I
say bar as well, but, you know, also I think this is going to be it's processor intensive, and therefore for a mobile device, you're just using battery for the sake of it, aren't you, really?
It just seems an odd purchase for Google. You usually buy lots of web firms.
Well, I don't know. What they get with this is, of course, the developers. So you've clearly got some guys that are thinking a bit out of the box in terms of UI.
Or in the box.
Or in the box, indeed. So, boom. So, you know, they've got some guys which are quite, and that's really what Microsoft's been doing that for years. They've been kind of getting all the developers that they can to work for Microsoft, just so they can't work for anybody else. And whether their creativity or whatever sees the light of day, we'll just have to wait and see. But
not only that, though, they also have the patents for all these things.
Indeed.
For their acts, their gestures and actions, they put patents on it and their environment. So another reason why it might be good to get hold of it.
But before we crack on, just a little update on that Google Edition story. Google confirmed to the BBC that Google Editions will not be affected by the firm's present legal troubles over trying to digitise millions of out-of-print books. Plans for Google Editions will happen independent of whatever the settlement agreement is, said Google's Mr. Stricker. The search giant's efforts to create the world's biggest digital library have been mired in legal action for the last couple of years. Critics have long claimed Google's deal with US publishers and authors would give them a monopoly over online book sales. Google said it would make millions of books searchable via the web. A ruling on the issue is due soon.
Okay. Yeah, so this is separate then. It's just effectively if someone wants to sell their book via Google,
yes.
I guess they can ask Google, and Google's probably already got it scanned anyway. Yep.
Yes.
Good idea.
The next non-story is Gmail is returned to the UK.
And about time too. I mean, the people that owned gmail.co.uk in the UK, they only wanted £27 million from Google.
Mere
originally.
Pennies.
You know, and Google didn't want to pay them, and so they went away and created that googlemail.co.uk domain. So, you know, people in the UK had to go and get these Google Mail accounts. But fortunately, no longer.
We could still use gmail.com. It wasn't like the end of the world. I'm not sure I would have paid $27 million just for so I could have gmail.co.uk.
Actually, I'm not. Could you sign up for a gmail.com account from the UK?
You signed up for gmail.co.uk, but you could still use gmail.com.
Could you? Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm
a gmail.com.
I'm a gmail.com, but that was before they launched the UK service. So.
And I think that's why I'm the same. I got mines well before the actual UK one came
along. I think they did start doing some IP address, geo, whatever they do it. And if you had a UK IP address, then you couldn't get a gmail.com address anymore.
Okay, I'm not sure of the actual timing of it, but each username across Gmail and across the .com and the .co.uk is unique, and therefore I'm pretty sure it knows that either will work.
Okay,
pretty sure.
Oh, fantastic! Thanks for that. I guess it must be because they're saying if you've currently got a googlemail.co.uk, you can swap to using gmail.co.uk or gmail.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it must be a unique. Anyway, Google Search has changed. So they have streamlined their homepage, or their front page, and their search options. They've now moved to a left-hand side navigation, which is
it's kind of duplicating the menu that's just above it, isn't it? Where it used to be at the top of the screen, or is still at the top of the screen.
Redundancy is a wonderful thing.
They've now got it on the left with little pretty icons.
Yeah. But I think it's just they've just kind of cleaned it up a little bit. They've flattened their logo. Fantastic. No more drop shadow. And it also applies to the mobile site.
I kind of went meh a bit. It looks okay. It's never been the most in-depth of pages, has it?
No, I just
deliberately saying.
I just think that the search tools that they've added in over the last 12 months, I still find really, 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 really interesting. Just the anytimes, the different date ranges, and even that they've now got like social and nearby searching as options. It's all very good. And timelines now there, so you can hit timeline and you get a great timeline search. Anyway.
Yep, that's by the by, but yeah.
The last by the by Google story. Chrome's been updated. It's now even faster. It has bookmark sync and also preference sync as well. So it'll sync between different Chromes on Windows, Mac, whatever. And I've added in some HTML5 features, geolocation and file drag and drop to name but two. This is also the first one to have Flash baked in and available via the auto update mechanism. How posh.
That's right. Well, take that, Apple.
I wonder the day we're going to have a Chrome release where they say, we're getting a bit bloated now, so we've slowed down a bit. Surely that's coming.
And a little tidbit to finish off. IE's fell before 6% market share.
Now, that is quite interesting, isn't it?
In a kind of
quite interesting.
Well, I don't know. Whenever. It's been ever since it's been less than 90% almost, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's only been, it's taken 15 months to drop 10%.
Which is a substantial number of users.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, some other HTML5 related stories. So there's a whole lot of, we did say we'd never talk about all this video format stuff again. I think it was... But
well, I'm nearly not here this week because I lost the will to live after the half hour of the podcast last week.
It's okay. We're nearly not here this week either, just because we had to wait for you.
Well, I asked for that, didn't I? There we go. Touche.
Sticking with HTML5 and standards, Microsoft have sided with Apple on H.264. So IE9 will support it alongside other video formats.
Yeah, I think that's important to say, isn't it? That they've said that H.264 will be the built-in standard that they use for their HTML5. But, you know, they've kind of said, well, plugins are there for the rest of them. You want to build a plugin. That's what they're there for.
It's kind of leaving Firefox a bit on their own.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Firefox really at the moment.
Yeah, because all this competition is down to them. If it wasn't for them, IE would just still be in charge, really.
And it's another split that's not going to be good for users. In many, many ways. Firefox can't include the 264 because it costs $5 million for a license and it's not open source, so they can't include it with their. With their browser download.
No, I think the important thing after we had our long discussion last week on this, I did actually even go away and do a bit of research about the and there were a number of stories about the MPEG LA, the MPEG Licensing Authority, which deals with all the licensing of the H.264, and a number of articles during the week even about how. They have got they've put a license agreement basically in every single phone camera and camcorder that you buy now has the manufacturers have got a license with the MPEG LA, and it means of course that they don't have these, that they're not allowable to be downstream, they don't transfer the licenses downstream to the consumers. So although you can make things with those camcorders, even the professional camcorders that can cost, you know, £5,000 to £10,000, you're actually breaking the license agreement if you make anything that's non-commercial, which is quite something. The stranglehold that these guys have said, you know, although they're saying like, okay, there's nothing and we're not going to take any licensing fees till 2012 or 2015 or whatever it is, that actually they could turn around and start charging us all for making our own home movies, which seems completely
GIF, CompuServe.
I think it's exactly. Another, I mean, in terms of browsers as well, that means that where lots of even little apps on the iPhone, we use, you know, browsers that use their engines to actually display content. I imagine that licensing doesn't flow down into their applications, and they might
it doesn't. You're right, and the way that the MPEG LA works is that they just wait till you've got a huge number of users or whatever, and then they come and hit you with a big bill for and that's their business model. So if you don't like that, well, tough. You know,
creeps. And I'm just converting all our digital outbox video in H.264. I'd better stop.
So it's, I mean, if you're using, say, Flash to put, you know, convert your videos into 264 and then display them, I think you're okay. Because you've had to pay for that license. Well,
yes, but I'm saying that doesn't really matter. If you use H.264, you're liable as a kind of a producer. So even if you're using, because basically you're allowed to encode in H.264 within Flash because Adobe have paying the license for you to be able to do that. But anything you create or encode in that, you know, if that suddenly gets, if you're then selling that video in some way, then the MPEG LA can come after you because you've not paid them money as well. Mm. So they just hit absolutely everybody every single time.
The other thing that this does is it's going to stop, you know, someone like a Firefox starting up in HTML5, as in Firefox, if it does take hold, Microsoft, by doing this move to a license model, knows that a small browser isn't going to get any, you know, foothold because it can't afford the £1 million of licensing fees to actually do it.
Yeah. And we should also say about the Og Theora, this allegedly free one at the moment, that one of the reasons that Microsoft and Apple haven't gone with that is because of the patents, which it's not been proven that it doesn't infringe on the patents of the MPEG LA, and there may become a big lawsuit in the future where they get taken to court because they're infringing patents.
I think it's only fair to say that that's in now Microsoft and Apple's best interest to spread that kind of rumor, or enhance it. It's clearly not known at the moment, is it?
No, anyone's come out
and said it definitely does. People have just said, well, we just don't know at the moment.
Well, there was a thing this week when they're saying, well, actually, I mean, Steve Jobs did come out and say that, you know, that actually whether it is fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but he does say, look, it's in shaky ground from a legal standpoint, and that's why they wouldn't go with it.
So what we really need is Google to open source the product that it bought. I can't remember what it's called now, and open source that, use it for YouTube, and make it the de facto norm.
Yes, please, Google, if you're listening.
That'll be nice.
Moving on, Scribd. I don't know if either of you guys have used Scribd before.
It scribed.
Oh, it's scribed. Yay. I've always called it Scribd.
Oh, I'm sure that you took the piss out of me one time for getting something wrong.
I did. But in my head, that's always been Scribd. But it is scribed. You are right. I am a fool. Anyway, scribed.
I'm going to cut that bit of the podcast out.
You're not going to cut that bit out. You're not going to cut out that, are you?
No, I'm going to have that on repeat.
Moving on. Scribed. Oh, I'm just giving myself more editing.
That's right. The laugh, listeners, is because Ian's cut that bit out where he talked about Scribd.
Anyway, Scribd or Scribd, they have are scrapping Flash. So they use Flash to display all the documents. I'm sure they said 10 million documents. And they're moving to HTML5. Which I thought was a fairly big move and would take them months, but it seems they've been developing this for 6 months. And it's things like Chrome and Safari and Firefox and IE9 moving on to HTML5. I think also just the speed they're now getting from the browsers that's allowed them to do this. I've got a demo page up, and it's very, very impressive.
I don't think I've ever used Scribd. Is it a document store?
I can throw in a Word document or any kind of document and put it up there and then just link it out.
Okay. So it's just, again, it's someone jumping on board, and they've said that they're betting their future on HTML5 and that direction rather than Flash. They're sort of saying the 3 years of development they put into Flash, they're going to turn their backs on it.
Yeah, and the reason for doing that is it just makes their content viewable anywhere. No plugins required. Allegedly.
Yeah, and that does make a difference.
I mean, it's good to see, it's good to see that HTML5 is now gaining some foothold a lot of the actual modern browsers do support it quite well.
Yes.
But it's just that developers don't really put it in there, and mostly that's been because of Internet Explorer 6. But we've seen a big, move in the number of people using Internet Explorer 6 recently, so it actually becomes more and more viable to start doing HTML5 techniques.
Yes. Agreed. One kind of little story that I spotted this week, but I thought was very exciting, was Dropbox. So they've put out their Android app. They've now got a native iPad app. But more importantly, they've now released a mobile API, which they've tagged Dropbox Anywhere. So as a developer, you could integrate Dropbox into your application via the API.
So it means that any device that doesn't have local storage, can save files, basically.
Yes. I thought that was a very, very interesting and exciting development.
I wonder how open the API is, because obviously this is going to be useful to anyone developing a storage app of whatever type.
As a developer, you do have to sign up. You do have to say what your app is, and you have to tell them how you're going to use the API. How is it going to kind of help your app? And then they kind of make those decisions. So how open that is, I don't know. How many people they're actually opening that up to, I'm not sure at the moment. But there's certainly a facility now where you can request to join the developer program.
Yes, and there's a desktop API coming later this year as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're a desktop developer, you should be able to get in on that.
I guess they're trying to be the, you know, where Skype is the king of, you know, telephony. Is that the right word? they're trying to be the you know, cloud save service, I guess.
Yeah, I've used to say this before. MobileMe always disappoints me in the Mac. I always thought, see if Apple, and I guess the reason they don't do this is that they don't need to. But if you bought an iPhone or you bought an iPad and it came with, there's 2 gig of web space or 10 gig of web space, and for you to store documents, music, whatever you want, and it's available, you know, from any device, and you got that as part of buying a device, it's just a very, very strong service.
It is, and you know, the great thing about Dropbox, it's one of those kind of install and forget things, and it's not just about storing docs, is it? It's actually about backup onto multiple systems, and they're, you know, the way that they do that, using the LAN as well, so that you know, different computers behind the LAN, it will sync all the stuff without having to go via the cloud. It's all really well done,
and that's a relatively recent addition as well, isn't it? So they've moved that LAN addition.
LAN sync, yeah.
It's relatively recent, which is a good thing to point out to the listeners that you can now use Dropbox across your network, like say to back up whatever.
But it does work very well. A final little update, Skype. So five-way video calling is going to be launched within the next week.
Uh-oh. I know what this means.
So it's going to be for Windows first. So I think the client's coming out first and Mac later this year. The first 3 to 4 months will be free, and then it'll be a paid-for service.
Uh-oh.
and I think also that if you remember back to CES this year, Skype were integrating with a number of TV vendors, so you could have Skype from your TV, you know, including a little camera somewhere and the software. So it kind of makes sense that this has came along, and I also think it's great for our podcast.
Do you really, really think that our flaky connections are going to stand to having 4 videos going?
We'll soon find out.
We will. I guess we'll find out.
We definitely will, and we're going to record it all, and it's a great opportunity for Ian and I to make use of Boinks TV.
Oh no! Which, that means I need to get some green sheets.
Yeah. Because if it hasn't been one of our picks before, it certainly should be soon.
We're just talking before we started. We're just talking about buying like mics, like you've got, Henry. You know, proper booms, pop shields, and all that kind of nonsense. And it's just so me and Chris can be Leo Laporte. That's all we want to be.
Because obviously, a mic's going to make me sound. Like him.
Well, I'm not putting this through any processing, but that's the other thing that you could do, of course. Well, I'm saying I'm not. Actually, I don't.
I want the mic to drop me a couple of octaves.
Oh dear. And that's our news and stories for this week. So now on to our picks. We need to do Henry last, I think. So Chris, your pick?
My pick is something called MoviePeg, and basically it's it's a little bit of plastic that happens to cost £5, but what it effectively does, it's like a little kickstand for your iPhone. I haven't got one, but I can see pictures of it in use. I am not paying £5 for it, but it looks like it fits the bill for if you want to stand your iPhone up either vertically or horizontally. Maybe on a desk or something when you're watching or looking at recipes and things like that. It looks good.
They did look smart, those, actually.
I know somebody that bought one.
And?
Oh, dear.
Is that really? Okay, so it's a bad pick?
Well, Shaquille picked one up. And and as you say, in the pictures, it looks great. And in practice, it works, but to a fashion.
Do you need almost two of them to make it more secure?
Well, you just had to fiddle it around a little bit to get it standing, and it was starting to leave a mark on the phone as well.
Oh, I don't care about things like that. I threw my iPhone the other day peed me off so much. That's normally the death knell of my devices, because once I start getting angry at them.
No, you see, I can't do that to my gadgets. So when things start to mark a gadget, it kind of annoys me.
They do bounce quite well on carpets, it has to be said.
But you just want a new iPhone. Oh, sorry, an Android device. Oh, sorry, a Windows device.
Anything.
Anything but.
Exactly.
Anything but. So thanks for that.
That's all right. MoviePeg.
I wouldn't buy one, listeners.
Movie-peg.com.
Don't buy one.
If you've got a spare fiver. Nah, in fact, it's going to be £10 then to make it secure.
Yeah, get a movie wedge. Far better.
Which is a better idea, yeah.
Great pick.
Thank you.
Anyway, my pick only lasts for another week. So get in there quick. And I'd love to say it's free, but you have to buy another game to play it. So my pick is Halo Recon. If you have picked up ODST.
Hello, Recon.
Recon. Is that not what it's called?
Reach.
Oh, it is Reach. Why have I written Recon?
I think you better do that one again.
I don't even know why I've written Recon.
You've got Ghost Recon on your mind.
Well, I have just put it in one of my... I was playing Words with Friends just before we started, and Recon was one of the words. So I've changed it now.
I didn't even notice that, otherwise I'd have pointed that one out.
Yeah, you never noticed that either.
I didn't until you said it.
Yeah. Then. Anyway, it looked right. Anyway, my pick this week. Oh, what a ball bag. My pick this week is Halo Reach, which is a beta test. So it probably is a poor pick for some people. But if you've got ODST, that's Halo ODST, then you can play Reach for free. It came out on Tuesday, Monday?
It was on the Monday, 3rd of May.
So it came out on Monday. It's only going to last 2 or 3 weeks. And then the full game will come out in the fall. Hate seeing the fall.
Yeah, I think that's very American.
Yeah.
2 to 3 weeks is definitely not going to be long enough for this, though, is it?
No. So Halo Reach, it comes with 3 or 4 multiplayer modes, some new modes that haven't been seen in Halo before, some subtle changes to the Halo way of playing, some things like jetpacks and other such nonsense. But I have loved it. I've thought it's been great. And I know you've been on, Chris, as well.
I have, and I have equally loved it. There's been some epic games. Real good fun.
There has. I mean, Invasion came out as a game mode yesterday. And, oh, what a hoot. What an absolute hoot. Even though we didn't know what we were doing, clearly.
That was part of the fun, though, trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
We've kind of read the rules today and realised we weren't quite playing it right, which maybe explains why we lost.
They've kind of taken... It's almost like the... paintball mentality, where you go to paintballing and there's loads of different games that you play throughout the day. Yeah. They've kind of taken that and converted it into this, you know, put it in their universe, and that's pretty impressive, has to be said.
Yes, definitely.
Was it for Halo 2 or 3 or there was the game with the ball?
Oddball.
Was there not a
you had to chuck
where,
a skull around, actually, I think.
Or and you could only use the hammer thing to...
Oh, no, that was Halo 3. That was Griffball.
Griffball, yes. That was.
Remember, Chris will remember Griffball. Yes. I loved Griffball.
That was a mental game.
Yeah. So that was Halo 3, yes. And that was when they brought in the Forge? So you could do your own level editing and all that kind of stuff. And I think Griffball had come out of that, and then they made it an official part. It was an official download thing, an official mode. But that was that. I loved that. It was fantastic. But yeah, if you've got ODST, definitely download Halo Reach and get on it before it disappears.
Yep,
and if not, we'll see you in, 6 months' time, I guess, when it's out.
And it already seems like it's a must-have. You know, even the little bit we've seen, and they've promised a lot more. We've only got maybe 4 maps to play with, and maybe...
I think so.
About 6 different game modes.
Might only be 3 maps, actually.
So it's all very impressive.
It is. We even had that, I'm just thinking that epic... I'm trying to remember the name of the game mode, where you need to capture flags and take them back to your base, and we're down one man, and oh, what a game we had. It was superb.
That was the game just before you started putting all the flags in the enemy base.
It was. I was very confused. Henry, your pick.
My pick is something called Cupidino.com. Cupidino. Now, of course, this is a bit of a wordplay on Cupertino, which is obviously where Apple have their headquarters. Cupidino, from the blurb on the website, is a beautiful new dating site created for fans of Apple products by fans of Apple products.
And this is
this is a new dating website where you can find the Apple fanboy or girl of your dreams.
Oh, look at my apples. Really good at them. Don't look at my apples.
So they've launched on Twitter. They've not actually launched the website yet. They're just drumming up some support. And no, it's not a joke. And they're really deadly serious. And
they genuinely are doing this for real.
They genuinely are doing this.
No, they are.
They really are. Yeah. And you know, to be fair, it can be difficult if you like your Apple stuff and to find someone who truly appreciates that.
So I think they're
really filling a gap in the market. So.
A really rubbish gap.
Cupidino CA, I think, is the Twitter username that you need to follow to get the up to the minute info and gen on when they're launching. But you know, if you're looking for a new man or girl in your life, then Cupidino.com could be just the thing for you.
And I can exclusively reveal that Shaki will be beta testing the service for us. It might be one of us have to put a profile in for him, but
sign him up. if he's not here, he's not here to say no.
Exactly. He's just sent me a text. He is well up for it.
There we go.
When does it launch, Henry? Do you know?
No, I think it's just fairly soon, but I'm not sure exactly on timing, and I'm not sure that they've actually confirmed their final timings of things, but they're working hard on it.
So. They're probably worried about a rush of people if they release a date.
I'm surprised they've even told anybody. I thought they'd done an Apple thing and just said, we're coming up with an idea and we'll launch it soon.
It's not called iCupertino either, is it, Sue?
If you want to find out more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter as digitaloutbox. Talk to us, send us something on Skype. We're in digitaloutbox in that as well, and we're on, what's our email? info@digitaloutbox.com.
Can we also mention that this week there's a very special event at the Apple Store in Glasgow where Digital Outbox will be presenting about podcasting. Mm-hmm. So on Wednesday, 7 for 7:30 at the Apple Store in Glasgow.
7 for 7:30.
The Glasgow Mac User Group are there, where you can meet lots of people who are passionate about Macs and all things Apple.
They'll be all signing up for Cupertino. In fact, if you want a selection of the people that are going to be available on Cupertino before site launches, you can have a look at this at the Mac Store.
I'll try and take some sneaky photos.
Sign some people up.
Yeah. Maybe there's a finder's fee. That sounds wrong. So yeah, presentation this week for a half hour.
And
5 minute presentation, 25 minute questions.
Yeah, probably. Something like that. And Henry's pulled out, and you're not going. So I think it's just me and Shaq, and even he's not being very committal.
I'm sure if Scotland wasn't so far north.
I'm choosing your words wisely.
I was just wondering what you were going to say there, Chris. I'm glad you chose something that wasn't particularly derogatory.
And then I definitely wouldn't be able to turn up. I wouldn't be allowed in the country.
Where can we find out more about you, Chris?
Twitter at CheesyUK, and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
Thank you very much. Henry?
Hi, I'm TalkRubarb on Twitter, and talkrubarb.com/WordPress is my blog.
Fantastic. I am Shreeper on Twitter. My blog is END.net, and that was episode 47. We'll be right back. But then again, just spent most of my life waiting for you.
That sounds, you know, that's going to be one.
No, that sounds wrong, actually. I'm going to have to cut that out. I've just realised the gay connotations from that. That will get dropped. I am in charge.
Oh, we need some nice romantic music. Do you want, shall I leave? Shall I?
I'll cut this out, but I think I've got the ending for this week's show already.